Hello, and welcome to the RPG Academy podcast. My name is Michael, and we are here tonight for a review of the brand new 2024 D&D 5e.5-ish, maybe, Player's Handbook. Joining me today is Michael. Michael, say hello to everyone.
Hello. Howdy out there.
In radio land. And then also joining us is Jake. Jake, say hello to everyone.
Hey, everybody. It's Jake.
Now, all three of us have been on the show in various ways and means before, but I believe this is the first time the three of us have gathered together for a review episode. So just quickly, my bona fides are terrible. I don't read the rules. I don't follow them. So my opinion has very little to do with what we're doing here today. That's why I brought these two gentlemen, because that is not the case for them. So Jake, if you don't mind, just kind of quickly give us a little taste of who you are, what's your experience with role-playing games, and then specifically within 5th edition.
So I am an avid RPG player. I've been playing for almost a decade, I guess, at this point. I couldn't do it before when I was younger because my mom thought it was the devil. So 5th edition really is the edition I came into. I played 3, 5, you know, right at the beginning when everybody wasn't playing 4. And so 5th edition is really my sweet spot, but I played a bunch of different games, and I ran some games within 5th edition for the RPG Academy on the Twitch stream.
Excellent. All right, and then Michael.
Hey, I came in 2nd edition, and at the very tail end of it, right into the 3rd, played a bunch of 3rd, played some of 4th until we fell out, did D&D Next for 5th edition. And then in 5th edition, we had our home games that we ran for multiple years, whether I was GM or playing, and some of those are still going on. And then we also got into a West Marches server where I think I had over like 600 sessions ran on that server in 5th edition. So I feel like I've seen pretty much everything that can be done or broken in 5th edition, or like works or doesn't work. And I have a lot of love for D&D and how it brings people into the hobby. Also, and probably a greater love for some other systems as well.
Fair enough. But again, I appreciate both of you very much joining me. I was lucky enough to get a media copy of the book. And then at Gen Con, I was lucky enough to get another one. And then they started selling them. So even though we've actually had the book for a while, this is our first time reviewing it. I'm sure other people out there have already had reviews going on. But we wanted to take a little time, really deep dive, at least those two did, before we got into things. But we're going to start, as we always do here, kind of high level, just sort of a general overview, what your sense of this book is, and then we'll get into some specifics, maybe things that we really liked, maybe some things that we didn't care for as much, maybe something that we think they missed, like they should have done this and they didn't, and then we'll kind of wrap it up with some final thoughts. So we'll start again with you, Jake, sort of overall impressions, positive, negatives. Again, don't necessarily deep dive, but feel free to hit a few points if you'd like. What did you think about this book?
So I really did like it. I went into it very skeptical just because we're creatures of habit. I don't want to change things, especially something that I've been doing for so long with 5e. And so I went in wanting to hate it. And the more I got into it, the more I love the layout, the art. Like, there's so many positive things. And in my opinion, there's very few negative things. And so I'm a believer now in what is in here. So hopefully I don't sound like I'm shilling too much. But as far as I can tell, they've fixed a lot of things that I didn't like about 5e. And fixed some things that I thought I liked and found out that I shouldn't be liking those things anyway because it's so much better.
Excellent. So I'll go next again, because throughout this, you're going to see very easily that mine is the lightest touch that of all the three of us. But I also really enjoyed the book. Now, I did not read it every single word. Like when we got to the spells, I basically skipped all of that. When I got to the classes and subclasses, I read Wizard all the way through because that's my favorite class. And then I sort of sampled some of the ones that had the different subclasses just to get a feel for what they had changed. But as Jake was saying, almost everything I read, I felt was an improvement. In some cases, it's very minor. There's like some terminology changes. Even when you roll a D20, it has a particular word now that is the thing that you do. I think test is the word they call it now. It's a D20 test, which is similar terminology I've seen in many other games. But this is the first time I think D&D has used that specific phrasing. And then they took some of the things that you would do on your turn that I would sort of roll into like role play, but they've codified it and said, oh, that thing that you're doing, there's a word for that. And while I think for many of us, that's like, well, we didn't really need that, but it's not for us. This is for the people, this is their first PHB. This is their intro into the game. And I think that is where I saw, like what I kept thinking was a good improvement was, this is for onboarding. The, you know, there's a lot of the meat, at least again, the high level that I skimmed it, I didn't feel was really radically different. But all the things I called out or noticed was, oh, that's for the new person. That's for the new person. And as someone who wants to be an ambassador for this hobby and was trying to get people to play it, I loved all of that. Now, it may not all land perfectly, but it seemed pretty clear that the intent was, if this is someone's first game, how do we make it easy for them to get on board? And I think ultimately they did a pretty good job of that. All right, Michael, sir, kind of overall thoughts.
So overall, I like it, I think is the short answer. If I can sum up the book as quickly as possible, it's that this is a balance patch. That's what this is. Like, if you have any experience playing video games, the things that were very brokenly bad are now good or adequate. The things that were very brokenly overpowered or too good are now adequate or good. So they brought things into the middle and things that like were good, like, you know, and added to them and given them a little more flavor in some areas. So in summary, you know, I'll cut to my end chase. If you're a person that really wants the sort of like goofy, broken stuff, I think this is like a downgrade for you. I think if you're a person who wants some stability and some cohesion with your group, this is an improvement for you. And if you're just a regular player, I think this is also just an improvement for you.
Okay. So again, off the bat, we're all pretty solidly positive on the book. I think we all kind of agree that it is in some ways an enhancement and improvement. Doesn't mean it's perfect, but we're liking what we've seen so far. So I'll jump back to you, Jake. If you could pick one thing, we'll probably go a couple times around, but if you could pick like one thing that you saw as an improvement or an addition that you're glad is in there, and it could be like a wizard subclass, for example. But is there something that you really, that stood out to you is like, wow, this is cool. I'm glad it's here. Or I'm glad they made this change or fix.
So this is, it's not as flashy of a thing to like, but my favorite thing they added was toward the back, they have a whole section dedicated and it's called the rules glossary.
Oh yeah.
And they just take every single keyword or whatever that you're sitting at the table and somebody's like, wait, how does concentration work again? Wait, what is my jump? How do I jump again? And it's all literally right there very quickly where you can reference it. And what I was telling my friends about it is, we don't need a rules lawyer anymore. You don't need that guy at the table that you used to need to help you figure it out, because now you can just check the law book and it's right there. And kind of jumping with that is, they took all of the crap, I guess, that they disseminated throughout the first book of how to play the game, and they shoved it all up front in the first 30 pages, and they were just like, here it all is, how to play the game. And so that way you're not really flipping. I remember doing a lot of flipping in the old player's handbook trying to find specific sections. Yep. So rules glossary and just the layout is way better than the original.
Yeah, I would agree with both of those. That glossary was absolutely one of my favorite things. There's a solid index and there's a rules glossary. Those two things, like, it's almost criminal that they weren't there before.
Yeah.
But I mean, they also didn't skimp when they're like, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to do it right. And it is very easily accessible and able to get the information you need quickly. Jeremy Crawford did mention this at that thing at Gen Con where we did the little media day. And he said, this is the first time in the history of D&D that they have taught people how to play the game before the character generation rules. So you actually have the first like 20, 30 pages kind of walks you through how the game works, how you would play it. Then you get into the rules for the player. And I think this hits on what Jake was talking about, where I can see why you would do it the other way. Like, there is a logic to that. I know several people who say they don't really understand how games work until they build a character. And in the process of building a character for a game, it kind of explains, oh, this is how I would do a thing, so this must be a thing that gets done. And it just sort of helps them grok what they're doing. So I understand it from a high level, but to Jake's point, it now puts the rules where you need to start figuring stuff out altogether. You don't have to, that the first 50 pages, you're not going to be flipping back and forth. And I think that is a huge improvement. Mm-hmm. And then I already touched on it. I would also say that all those different things, like I want to see, do I know anything about this monster? Does it have vulnerabilities? I want to observe something about this creature or this NPC. They've codified and terminalized those where it's like, oh, this is the word you would use. So this is how you would accomplish that in a turn or in an action. And again, I think for onboarding new players, that's really good. Michael.
I think that if I had to pick one right out of the gate, it would be decreasing the gap between the power level between casters and your martial classes. Is there still a gap? Yeah, I think that it's still there. Is it? It certainly is noticeable. Can you still survive as like an all barbarian party or an all wizard party? Absolutely. So that's that. They didn't take away that option, but I think that they gave martial classes more options because the number one problem, I think, with the system for a long time and a lot of systems is that spells are class features that you can trade out all the time. And not getting that as a martial class makes it a little less interesting. Not even necessarily less powerful, but less interesting. You know, you don't get your locate creatures. You don't get your goofy spells that you can do. And there's more things in that arena. And the things that they're good at, that the martial classes are good at, I think they've made them more consistently good at. So I'm like excited. Let me put it this way. I played probably hundreds of characters in fifth edition. I never played a monk because it was boring. Not because like it was bad, but because it was boring. I didn't want to. And I know that that's like, that may put people in two different camps, but that's just my opinion.
Right.
That's just my experience. You may think wizards are boring, whatever. And you're not wrong. Neither one of us is. But as the first thing that I looked at, I was like, oh man, I want to play a monk. And the day after I bought this book, we had a one shot with friend group. And I was like, hey, can I play a monk? Even though it's not even the right system. It's not even, we weren't even playing D&D. That's how much I wanted to play monk. And that's exciting to be excited about doing something that I'd never done in the system before.
Very, very cool. All right, so we'll circle back to you, Jake. Another one of something that stood out to you as a really good positive you were excited about, you were excited to maybe dive into in a game.
So this, it kind of goes in hand with what Michael just said, is they added this new thing called Weapon Masteries. Mm. And I freaking love them because it adds a special way that you, in a martial class, can control one of those weapons that you are proficient with. And so, because they still have the whole, like, you know, versatile or two-handed or whatever that have their little bonus or feature that you can do with it. But they added a special thing for every single weapon, and you have to be, you know, proficient or whatever with the weapon. But then that's just another way that a martial class, I'm trying to pull one up so I can read exactly one of them, is, for example, it was, I think it's Nick. When you make an extra attack of the light property, you can make it as part of the attack action instead of a bonus action. You can make this extra attack only once per turn. And so you basically just given another attack for free, apart from your two-handed one-hit bonus action off-hit. Now you're going hit. Mm-hmm. And it's only because you're good with that weapon. And I think it makes it more exciting. And we might see a lot of people that play fighter start trading out weapons based on situations to get those weapon masteries and use them. Because right now, it's I just need to hit as many times as I can in one turn, and that's all I need. But with these weapon masteries, there's a lot of cool stuff you can do that you can use the battlefield to your advantage, and you know the situation for like slowing or pushing or shoving, and all that is tied into these weapons, and you got to have the right weapon to use that special property. So I'm excited for, in my opinion, to play a martial class and just have like one of every weapon type somewhere and just like really just, you know, kind of, it's almost like a battle control wizard, but mm-hmm. as a fighter.
Yeah, my spells are my golf bag of different types of weapons.
Exactly, yes. I believe Brad was talking about they played in the D&D Open that one of the characters was a monk using a bow staff or quarter staff that had the topple. Was mm-hmm. like, and which again, if you play Baldur's Gate 3, that was in that too, where there's a way that you can basically make people fall down, which makes them prone. So depending on like what order you're in, you can give advantage or bonuses to everyone else if you go first. So again, is it still, you know, is it the most tactical version of RPGs out there? No, but does this add a different level of, like Jake's point, battlefield control, decision making? Because I don't necessarily want a lot of depth of strategy, but I want a breath. And I think that's what this gives me. I don't have to think seven moves ahead, but each initiative I can be like, oh, wait, if I go first, this can happen. And if you go first, this can happen. So it's still quick, but it adds just a little bit more to it that makes it, it's not just hit it with a stick till it stops moving. You're still kind of doing that, but it's a little more interesting than that, at least, hopefully. All right, Michael, you have a second thing you want to call out as a, something you're excited about?
I think the improvements all to the different classes really made them a lot more interesting. Things where you talk about like dead levels where like, oh, I'm not really getting a lot at this level. I mean, I can go into specifics and, sure. And I'm sure we'll get into that. But from like a broad approach, I think that there's less dead levels where you're not getting interesting stuff, which kind of doesn't feel great when you're doing that. And at high levels, I think the other thing that I'll say about this game is another major problem with the system has always been getting into higher levels gets very unwieldy for GMs and campaigns. And in my opinion, I would say in fifth edition that normally happened around like 11 to 14 to 15, the game sort of became unwieldy. Characters became not too powerful, but they became, it became hard to give them something that was a challenge without making it goofy. And I think that they pushed that with the rebalancing and everything they've done, they've pushed that a little higher. So now it's, you know, maybe 14, 15, 16, 17, where things start to get into that unwieldy state where it feels like you're not playing the same game. And I'm excited for that because that means hopefully more long-term games, more long-term adventures, and more high-level play and more interesting high-level play. So that's kind of two, but yeah,
that's fine. Go ahead. All right, we'll go one more round. And if you don't have anything specific, it's okay. Like, we don't have to keep doing that. But I wanted to try to get one more. So, Jake, do you have another one you'd like to call out before we move into maybe some things that weren't as good?
So, I really enjoyed the art. There's specific art, you know, that is, I don't know, not the best sort of toward the beginning, where it's like the showing real world people playing the game. Like, I could do without that because it kind of breaks the immersion of like the fantasy, but that's just a personal preference. The full page for each class, those are just such good images. And this one's going to be a little dumb, but the weapons and armor, like, I can't tell you how many times I've had players have to Google, like, what is a glaive? Just so they can see it. And it's like, you know, us who played a lot, you know, you do fantasy medieval stuff. You're like, oh, yeah, the glaive is a giant thing with, you know, it's like an axe on the end of it, you know? But having that there so you can just be like, oh, it's on this page. You can look at all the weapons. And then it makes it easier. And it's cool. All the art is cool. All the subclass art is cool. The cover. I haven't seen the alt cover because Michael gets the cool alt covers.
I haven't seen it either. It's not out yet. Yeah. Well, so they actually sent, this is the first time they've done that. They sent half. They're going to send the alt cover in the future because it wasn't ready yet.
Nice. Well, I look forward to seeing that. But the cover for this one, I really like it as well.
Not necessarily here specifically, though I do agree most of the art that I looked at I thought was really good. But they shared some of the art for the Monsters Manual that will be coming out, I think, later this year. I don't remember the order. One of them comes out later this year. One comes out early next year. But in the Monster Manual specifically, a lot of the art is being changed. So rather than having that sort of almost like baseball card profile picture of each monster, it's going to be the monster in action. So like they shared the example, I think it was a green dragon. It was like in a foresty swamp area and there was a bunch of adventurers and it looked like there was a spell going in between, like one was casting one at the other. And I think that's a very cool aspect. Again, it's one of those things like it's almost like obvious. Like why has it never been done that way? Because one of the things I look for in any of these books is inspiration. And not just necessarily like here's an adventure hook, but just as I'm flipping through the book, is there something that causes me to go, oh, I want to build an encounter around that. I want to build an adventure around that. I want to build a campaign around that. And just seeing the monsters in action, I think can do that. And again, it can also be, if this is your first time running, you know, you don't just put a dragon on one side of the field and the players on the other and you hit it with sticks until it stops moving, but almost kind of helps give you an idea of, oh, this is the situation that the dragon would want to have where it has advantage, it has the height, it has the reach, it has whatever the case may be. I just think that's a really smart thing. So even though that's not really related to PHB, I think for the new updated books, that's something I'm really looking forward to. I think Asimar and Goliath in the core handbook is pretty cool. Those aren't necessarily characters I have played a lot of, but in fourth edition, I played a couple of Goliath barbarians and they were a ton of fun because I also don't think fourth edition is as bad as a lot of people do. And then I think they brought back bloodied from fourth edition. It's a term now, again, if you are half hit points or less. And I believe some of the monsters are going to have effects that trigger. So they might gain a new ability or they might have something. Because, again, this is like a fourth edition thing, like a bone shard. You hit it when it got to the bloodied, it exploded or half exploded and did like radius damage. I think those are cool things that will help make battles, again, more tactical. So I'm looking forward to that. And then there was one more along those lines. Oh, minions. I think minions are back too, which again, I don't know if that's in the PHB, but I think minions are coming back, which is one of my favorite things. So I'm jumping around. Again, Michael.
Yeah, so in terms of things that we think are not as beneficial, I think I have two.
Okay.
I think the first one that I would go with is in the rebalancing, because this is a balance patch and things have sort of come to a middle. I think there's two situations where that's really bad. I think it's bad for the group of players that know each other and know that things that are broken aren't necessarily bad as long as they're not abused. And the, you know, just as like a quick example, right? With the loss of some of these like goofy broken things, there's less opportunity to make like goofy, not broken characters, right? I can think about like a plasmoid gummy bear character that's based off of Zangief from Street Fighter that can throw characters up in the air 30 feet and grab them and throw them down, right? Like you could build that by the rules in fifth edition. And things like that are going to be a little harder to do now to make these sort of, you know, anime-esque characters in this. And I think that that's like a draw. I think a lot of people come into D&D and anime and cartoons and video games and fighting games are all sort of intertwined. And I think it's going to be harder to scratch that itch with this system. I think it's going to be easier to scratch the itch of like your Wheel of Times, your Lord of the Rings, because things are a little more stable. But yeah, that's, I think, a downside to the system.
All right. So Jake, so we'll come back to you. So again, things that either you think were a miss, a step back, or maybe just something that's missing that you're like, they did all this, but they left out why. So any of that you'd like to share?
So I think one of the things they did I'm going to segue. I'll get there. Sure. So they changed race for species. Okay. Yep. I always thought that should be that. Like, it never made sense to me that they were called races before because, like, they are different species, right? But they made human, like, kind of bland. And, like, yeah, human is bland when you're in the fantasy world or whatever. But if you look at some of these other species, they have so many class features, including Dragonborn, like at fifth level, I think, get fly. They get spectral wings and they can fly, which that's totally broken in its own right. I say that having an Aarakocra in my party from the whatever book that added Aarakocra. And so, like, I don't know. I feel like they could have done a better job picking the good species, because I do like the Aesimar and the Goliaths being there, but like I wanted to see the goblins and bugbears, like the other fun ones that added, was it Morning Canaans or Fizzband? I don't remember which other book added all that stuff, but like, I don't know. I thought those were cool and fun and different. And then they're kind of like, well, let's go back to the boring old, you know, you got dwarves and elves and all that. And like, then humans are sitting there with, they get three features as a species when I think Dragonborn might have five on his page. And so it's like, they don't want you to play human, it seems like. And it's like, sometimes I just want to be a human. Like, yeah. I don't want to be scaly. I want to be myself, but in a fantasy world.
Yeah, I actually generally play human more than anything else.
Yeah.
Like, I think in the current edition, you get like an extra feat or something. You get
yeah.
like
this. Well, it's an origin feat, which I have a whole thing on feats anyway. But like, yeah, it's a lower feat than just taking an extra cool feat.
Mm-hmm. So Michael, back to you. Anything else, again, that was just something that you surprised they left out or something they think went the wrong direction?
Yeah, and I think I thought of one more, but these are smaller, right? I think everybody that plays that I know started using the homebrew origin or the sort of origin creation where you get to change your own stats for your backstory. In this, you know, it is a class-based system. They've put your stat increases under your background, And that and only limited them to the three stats. So if you play, you know, this type of background, this type of sailor, right? Like you're going to have to pick your ability increases to strength, dexterity, con, right? You can't split those up. And on top of that, the background now controls what origin feat you start with, which is sort of like a half feat or a three quarters feat in reference to fifth edition. And I think I think we got really accustomed to sort of making whatever you want. And I think for the most part, most parties will still bend those rules as they need to. And I think it could be a detractor. I actually like it. I think that interesting stories, whether it's RPGs, writing, movies, benefit from writing within a confines and trying to build within a script or a confines or rules or a system or a setting. I think that that can lead to some very interesting characters because you can't have everything. You can't have everything you want. So you have to give up something. But I think that's going to be a detractor for some people.
Okay.
On that topic, I do, like, I have a thought, I guess, on specifically backgrounds. Like, they did keep it very small, and they're, like, almost, you know, the same amount as there was in the original. But it occurs to me that, really, that section only takes up about 2 inches by 6 inches per thing. They got this big banner art with each of them that takes up more of the page. But I think maybe they're planning on leaning into that more per campaign to say, like, if you're doing, you know, Descent into Avernus, it's like, hey, here's a background for a Baldur's Gate city guard, you know, and they do it very specific to class or to the campaigns, rather. And so maybe that will add more options with every new release, kind of just like, here's the basics, and be more able to release those quickly since they're, I don't know, they're so small, but they mean so much in the large scheme of things. I don't know. That was just a thought I had.
No, I agree with you. I think this is a core book, right? And I think that they're getting people started. And I think that just like every RPG and especially D&D, they're going to expand it from here. There's going to be more options. There's going to be more options that can combine to make interesting stuff. Much like AI is the worst it will ever be, this is also the least options you will ever have in D&D 5.5. So we're looking at it through the smallest lens that you would have. So yeah, I agree with you.
Do we feel like there's been any advancement in the dump stat conundrum that, like, dexterity, constitution, and strength are by far the best stats? I mean, obviously you have your casting stats, but, like, other than if you're playing a caster, wisdom doesn't do a whole lot. But pretty much every class wants a good dex, wants a good con, and your marshals need good strength.
I don't think that there's been a lot that's changed. I mean, to me, your most importance are your dexterity, your con, and your wisdom overall, just in terms of like the spells that you're defending against and the effects that you're defending against. And strength was always the sort of one that was a little bit weaker. And there are examples in the book of where they've done small things to improve that. So like a very poignant example is the barbarian can substitute their strength score for their charisma score while they're raging to do certain things like intimidate people, right? I think we've all been doing this for years, but it's nice to see it codified.
Yep.
Right? Where it's like, hey, I want to go over and break my cup in this guy's face and show him how strong I am so that I can intimidate them, right? And that's like, we've been doing that for years. But it's nice to see it that even for new GMs, right, they're going to know that, hey, this is possible. So some small pieces.
The only thing about that is actually a negative for me is that whenever you have a rule, it is by definition exclusatory. So that basically now says you can't do that unless you have that ability, because otherwise then that ability is useless. So now that basically means you could have a really strong fighter, but they can't do that. And like I've always used the thing, like you could have a rogue that uses dexterity for intimidate by like throwing a dagger and just sticking it right next to some dude's head in a bar, right? But if there's not a feat for that, I mean, I'm still going to let people do it. But I feel like it's almost sending the wrong message. I'd rather that be an example of something you could do rather than a feat the character class has. So I actually think that's a negative.
Depending on my current feeling as a GM or DM in that moment, like where you described throwing the dagger as part of intimidate. I think the evil god in me says, well, first you're going to make a dexterity check to see if you can throw that dagger. And then if, you know, it could hit the guy in the eye or like right. bounce off the wall. And then I would then put that into advantage or disadvantage advantage, yeah. on the intimidation. And so, cause I imagine intimidation is really linked to charisma. Just because, like, some people can't speak well, like, especially when you're trying to sound tough. Like, when my wife is trying to sound tough to me, like, it's just like, you need to stop that. And it's just like, it's funny.
And know? It's terrifying.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. I never really personally, like, let people get away with swapping that. And maybe that's just a thing that I do personally. I don't know. But, like, if somebody tried to be like, can I use my whatever to do this? And I'm like, no, you can't do that. No, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is getting a little deeper into it.
Yeah.
And we obviously haven't read the DMG yet, the Dungeon Master's Guide. And I always have felt that that has been their weakest book for the mere fact that it gives too many rules and not enough how to GM things, right? Where it's, hey, it really is like sitting down with a GM. That book should be sitting down with a GM and saying like, look, all these rules, they're made up. The points don't matter. It's about having fun. And let me give you some examples of ways that we break our own rules. That's what I would love to see out of the DMG. And we want to say like, hey, you have some power to break and bend the rules. The important thing is, number one is are people having fun? Number two is the story interesting, right? And as long as those things are being met, well, then you're mostly doing your job as a GM. And here are some ways that you can achieve that. So I agree with you in that it feels exclusory to somebody who's new and not GM'd for as much as we have. So that is a devil's advocate piece to it. But but they can correct it if they write a good DMG.
I want there to be a section on pacing, because that is one of the hardest things I see people mess up a lot at conventions is they don't know how to do pacing well, and either it's over too quickly or it goes too long. All these different things. So I want a good healthy section on how to control the pacing on a one shot versus an adventure versus a campaign. But again, that's for a different book. All right. So one more time through. Again, this can be anything you want to share. Another positive, another negative, something they missed, anything else that you want to call out specifically about the book, Jake.
I'm gonna speed run some. I really do like the race versus species changes where that like everything is tied to your background. I think that is really, because like the one that I saw going around online is like, I'm the same species as Michael Phelps, but I can't do what Michael Phelps does, you know?
Right.
And so I think that it makes a lot of sense, and it makes your decisions a lot easier when it comes to class and race and everything, because it's like, now you can be a Goliath rogue if you really wanted to be, you know? And so I think that'll open up the door for some fun stuff. I think that the feat system is kind of cool. I like it. I like all the epic boons that kick in when you hit level 19. And I like how they've just made ability score improvement a feat that you can take instead of having to do, oh, you can choose a feat or do an ability score improvement. It's now just take the ability score improvement or any other feat that you want. And so I think they're really cool. They separate them out into origin feats, general feats. All your fighting styles are now feats as well. And so you have to be given the specific fighting style feat in your class breakdown, and then your epic boon feats. And I think, I don't know, I think it's cool. And I think, again, it leaves it open very quickly for these other books that may come out in the future to say, oh, we added 3 new origin feats, 10 new general feats, and it will all just be, you know, sectioned very easily versus before where it's kind of all over the place as far as what things mean. So there's a couple quick ones.
When I first read through the book, I think I was telling Michael this on the way home from Gen Con, the next time I run a 5e campaign, I'm just going to give everybody an epic boon feat at level 1. Like, that's why you're going to be the heroes of the stories, that you have that ability right off the bat. Cause I think they're all very cool, but level 19, come on, there's not much left, right? I want you to have the whole game with that. I think that, so this will be a miss for me. I think they should just, you get bonuses to your stats at certain levels, and then you get to choose feats. I think that's it's a trap choice that people are going to anguish over. It's like, well, if I just get the +2 to dex, then my bonus, you know, I get but the feats are cool. They're fun. So just at every whatever third level, you get a plus one to one stat or however they want to balance it out. But don't make that a choice. Always let people choose feats and not be left behind. It's a heroic fantasy game. By level 19, we're literally changing, you know, we're jumping through time. Who cares if I have a 22 strength by then? That would be a miss for me. Michael.
How many can I rattle through?
That's I don't know. The question. I'll set a timer and go.
So every caster is prepared now, and I think that having that stability is nice. There's no more like known, not known. It's way easier that they're tracking that. So every caster is interesting. Epic boons are cool. I'm glad they added them in. Things that were super Nova bursty in damage are like pretty much gone, with the exception of a couple things. So there's no more like, God, I'm a GM and I got a plan for my crazy Sorcadin that's going to do 197 damage in the first turn and completely like be an anime character, and that's cool, but also completely wreck the fight. So that's cool. There's a ton of push and movement effects now, and a lot of, pretty much like everybody has Misty Step or a teleport. So there's like, people are going to be bouncing around. And that could, I could end up hating that, because it was kind of goofy in fourth edition, where you're like, my role is to be a rogue and bounce people back and forth 5 feet 16 times on my turn. It is not that egregious. But yeah, so there's that. That's like an improvement. They, to my chagrin, as a core druid player, have fixed all of the conjure spells so that they are not incredibly broken anymore, and I am sad, but I also got it out of my system. So like, I can't summon pixies anymore that can turn all of my teammates into flying Tyrannosaurus Rexes. Like, these crazy broken things are gone. But in that gives way for more story. So that's a cool piece. And then I'm just going to give one from every class, like one thing that I just think of every class. Barbarians. Their rages last 10 minutes now, and they can do them. All you have to do is use a bonus action, and you can keep your rage. That's super cool. Always was a problem. Bards, your magical secrets, you now get one or two of them at every level past 10, where you can pick another like wizard or druid spell. So you get way more magical secrets by the end of your character. That's super cool. Clerics, they fixed divine intervention, and there's some goofy stuff that you can do with it, like instantly resting your whole team. That are like fun to be a cleric. Druids, huge nerf to the total HP pool that they have, but huge buff to how much damage and AC they have. So you're definitely less tanky, but you can like compete at damage at level 9, where you could never do that before. Fighter, Indomitable is crazy good now. And you can like get like a plus, it's your plus your fighter level to your save when you'd use Indomitable. Which is crazy at level 20. You're like, I get plus 20 to the save on top of whatever other bonuses you have. Monk, it doesn't suck now. Play it. Paladin, it's not broken anymore. Play it. Ranger, dual wielding is now good. And that feels cool, because you could never be Drizzt and feel good. Rogue is actually the only one I don't have, because I haven't read enough into it. Sorcerer is a ton more flavor, because nobody gets your sorcerer spells. Because the spells come from within you, only sorcerers get sorcerer spells. That's cool. Warlocks, they redid a whole bunch of invocations that were wildly underpowered and are now interesting to play. Wizard, you still get to be a wizard and you still have a ton of power and you're still the best caster in the game.
Wizard drool.
Yeah,
wizard everyone drool. Else drools. Yeah.
There's my rant.
The barbarian being able to like tap into the tree of life and like move people.
Oh, teleport. Yeah.
It is kind of a cool flavor. And I don't mean this as a negative, but definitely there's some Baldur's Gate 3 inspiration. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things. I don't know. It might've been parallel development. You know, they obviously knew what Larian was doing for years before the game even come out, but there's a lot that I see in this. It's like, oh, that's a lot like Baldur's Gate 3, but I'm loving Baldur's Gate 3. I'm still playing it like I'm a college kid and like staying up late and missing work. So that is all positives for me. We've touched on the art. I know Jake and I both very complimentary of it. Michael, did you have an art weigh in, positive, negative, flat?
Yeah. So I didn't get a second to do it, but the art is way better, and there is one clear reason why. And it's exactly what you said. And I'd encapsulated into backgrounds and landscapes are the setting. You can't, in a lot of the previous book, which the art was still good, I'm not taking away anything from those artists, and I'm not, and I don't know how to lay out, do a layout for a book and what the costs are, but they've applied a whole lot more real estate to the backgrounds of the characters and art that is in here. So you really get a feel of like what's going on. These are scenes, like you said, they're not portraits of like a character. Like, this is the paladin and I'm doing a very stiff face and this is what a paladin looks like. It's like a paladin in their natural environment smiting something or doing something cool, or a rogue jumping from a building. And there's a lot more backgrounds that, you know, it breeds ideas, like you said. So that's cool. Yeah.
I like the art quite a bit. There's one in particular that I really like. Again, as a man of a certain age, it is showing the characters from the old D&D cartoon. But at the bottom, it has like the names as if, you know, pictured. But Sheila, who is invisible, her name is there, but there's no art of her. So I just thought that was a great joke. But the Cavalier's missing. I don't know why the Cavalier's not there, other than he was kind of a jerk, so maybe they got rid of him finally. Anyway, I think we also talked about the layout. I think the layout is a big improvement. The flow of the book is so much better. The glossary and the index together would make this 10 times better than any other book, so that is a huge improvement for me. But anything else about the layout either of you would want to say? Michael, you seem like you've got something.
I mean, I'm sure Jake would say it too, but yeah, there are the character spells at the end of every class. So like if you're a wizard, all of your spells are right out in the wizard section. If you're a druid, all of the druid spells are in the druid section.
Yeah, less
but not the explanations, just the list.
The quick hits of like, cool, these are all the spells I have access to. Yep. And then they're also at the end of the book.
Yeah, and I imagine as a player, instead of having to have three different little sticky note tabs to remember, here's my class, here's my feats, and here's my spells. Now it's you just need one for your your class and one for whatever else you want to knock there. Yeah. I think what's also good about the layout specifically is the subclasses. Like, they tried to do a very good job of putting it in a way that makes sense. And not to mention, you know, like, the art that goes with those subclasses. So it's like, you get, okay, here's a wizard, but then here's your, you know, abjurer. You know, like, specific down to the subclass, which before, you just kind of had to imagine, you know, what does a shadow striker look like? You know, now you can actually get in and see what your specific subclass looks like, as well as all that stuff being separate. Because I remember in the old player's handbook, it was just like, it felt like you were flipping everywhere trying to find some specific rule or whatever that you're looking for. So I appreciate that when it comes to layout as well.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. So again, so basically final thoughts. I feel like we've been pretty in depth, but if there was something that you were hoping you would get a chance to say that just hasn't come out from a question I've asked, this would be the time. But then give it your overall rating. We do grades here from C- to A+. Because we only review things that we like. So if something was worse than a C+, we just wouldn't talk about it, which I don't think that's going to be an issue for us on this particular book. All the way up to an A+ means it's the best thing ever. Jake, any final thoughts and your final rating, sir?
So the first of my final thoughts was already mentioned by Michael, but the known spells, like removing that and giving everybody full access to their list, I love that. As an avid bard player, I always felt like those were the hardest decisions. Like, what spell am I going to get saddled with now for until eternity, because I don't have the time to swap it out per level and I'm not going to remember which one I hated. As well as like Eldritch Knight, you know, that was known spells as well. All those are fixed. The big one for me is the Ranger is just fixed. Like, Ranger was always weak in the original Player's Handbook, and then you had the revised Ranger that was the Unearthed Arcana that was like, we tried to fix it, but we still don't care. And now I think, like, looking at the Ranger subclass, I'm like, I might be playing a Ranger at some point. But for me, like, I don't want to give it an A+ because I'm like, that sounds too much, but like, that's what I want to give it. Like, it makes me excited to, like, this is going to sound dumb, so don't listen if you're a player in one of my games. It makes me want to start from scratch, you know? Ooh. Like, it makes me want to be like, all right, here we go, level one, and it's going to be good this time, you know?
Oh, you got to give him level three. You got to give him at least level three.
And like, I don't know, this is going to sound so dumb from playing, like, D&D specifically for such a long amount of time. I think the biggest thing that we do is we take rules on hearsay a lot of the time. And this is where these rules get handed down from player to player about, like, what does rolling a 20 actually mean? And like, or nat 20 mean? Because rules as written, it's only for combat. You know, it doesn't, like, if you roll it on a perception, it's not like, oh, boom, wow, you get the best possible result ever, and it's amazing. Like, you just rolled well, you know? And I think this book makes it easier for somebody to not fall into that pitfall of, oh, well, that's what they said the rule works as, so I'm just going to go with it. Because reading this, like, I can't tell you the conversations I have with my players about, like, spell components and stuff after reading this, being like, hey, turns out we've been doing this totally wrong. Because it's just like one of those things that, like, somebody says something one time and you're like, okay, I'm not going to look that up. I'm going to believe you. And then I'll tell other people that's how this game works.
Right. Yep.
And so it makes me excited just for all the new players coming in and the old players that maybe haven't actually read it. You know, they just, they read the section they need and then they forget the rest. And so I am going to give it an A+, but I'm like, A plus, like, could there be something better? Maybe just an A. Like,
yeah,
A plus sounds too good to be true. You know, I told you, I sound like I'm shilling.
D&D is the longest game of telephone in history. It's like, it's just handed down and it keeps getting perverted and changed and it'll recycle back. But I wouldn't have it any other way. Michael, any final, any final thoughts and or your final rating, sir?
Yeah, I definitely have my final thought. In terms of the rating, I really have to give it 2 ratings. I know that that's like cheating, and but I'm talking, so I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
In terms of D&D and like playing D&D, and if you like this sort of thing, and this is sort of your vibe, and you don't like 16th century Victorian era Vampire the Masquerade, whatever games, this is a 90%, because I don't want to do the lettering, because I know that everybody scores lettering differently in high schools. But it's a 90%. 9 out of the 10 things that I read in here are improvements. And I have read every single word of both books multiple times now. 9 out of the 10 things, I'm like, man, I'm sad I don't get to conjure animals and I get to conjure 16 velociraptors anymore. But it's an improvement. So like that counts. That counts as an improvement to the system. And if you want goofy things, just work them out with your GM. And if you want goofy things, that's the type of game that you need to find when you're going in or talking about it. So those aren't detractors for me in terms of the score. I would score it probably another 10 or something points lower for myself, because I think there's a lot of really great systems out there that lend themselves more to the type of gameplay that I want, which is sort of gritty, or, you know, your World of Darkness, your 40Ks. So that's my personal thing. But if I'm reviewing it, 9 out of 10.
Awesome.
And the thing to add is, if you disagree with anything that I said or you agree with anything that I said, come politely fight me on the Akatacon Discord server or at Akatacon and argue with me. And if you want to know like the 4 or 5 things that I found out that are already broken in this game where you're like, man, it's a lot of damage. come get on the Akatacon Discord server and message me, VERJAEGER, Very Eager. I'm on there. Come talk to me about it. I love shooting about GMing and about new systems and stuff like that. So that's the only thing I would.
All right, fair enough. So for me, I always try to keep this through the lens of who is this for? And I think this is absolutely for the brand new player. I think older players, experienced players, are going to still get something from it, because I think there are a ton of improvements. But really, this was written as a continuation of the onboarding, because D&D 5e has been more popular than any other edition. It continues. We haven't hit the bubble yet. Like, it continues to get more popular. And then Baldur's Gate 3 absolutely is bringing in even more players who never played before. And this is the instruction manual, bridging the gap between Baldur's Gate 3, playing at the table. And I think from that standpoint is absolutely a slam dunk. So like to Michael's point, if I'm gonna give it 2 ratings, I think as a brand new onboarding, it's an A+. As just the new version of the Player's Handbook, it's an A. Solid right there, like 91 maybe, it's a little higher. So because then you get to like the B+, A- range. Like it's a solid A.
Oh yeah, where's that tipping point? Who knows?
Well, is it an AP class or is it a 5.0?
Are you a senior? Are you a junior? Like this matters.
But I think it's great. I'm all on board. Again, shill or not, I got a free copy, but I bought one too. So we're going to end up giving one away at a Catacon, which again, November 8th, 9th, and 10th in Dayton, Ohio. All three of us will be there. But yeah, I am thrilled with what I saw. And honestly, this makes me crave that Dungeon Master's Guide, because I'm excited now to see what that looks like. Because if that book is as much as an improvement as this book is over the OPHB, this might be the best DMG out. You know, I don't know. I'm very excited about that. I'm excited about the monster manual. I don't really care about the online tools, the sigil thing they're working on. That doesn't affect me at all. But as far as this book goes, solid A. I suggest everyone get it. If you even already have the old one, and if you're brand new, absolutely get this version, not the older version. So, well, gentlemen, thank you both so much for being here. Thank you so much for taking the time to actually read all of the words in the book. I just read some of the words in the book, but I appreciate you taking the deep dive for me. So, Jake, where can people find you? If do you have social media that you want to plug? Any of that stuff, take a couple seconds, let people know where they can interact with you if you would like for them to.
I mean, if you want, you can hit me up on Twitch. I don't stream that much anymore at Frenzied Furling, but really just come see me at a Catacon. Because I ran my first game last year, and I had a blast. Because usually I just get off by doing the murder mystery. But I actually ran a game, and like it was fun. It was lots of fun. So come and check it out. I'll be there having lots of fun.
Fantastic. Michael, you already mentioned your handle on Discord. Is there anything else you'd want to send people to?
Try a bunch of different games. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it.
Yeah, I love D&D, but I play lots of different games. So
yeah.
As for myself, again, Facebook is like the only place I'm actually active anymore, and that's mostly just posting like when new episodes come out. I did recently join TikTok, so the RPG Academy or MKR_222, primarily talking about D&D stuff there, GM advice. So anything I've ever said on here, I'm trying to break into like 2-minute segments over there. It's going okay.
You're not dancing on TikTok?
No, oh. I'm not dancing. I don't do skits, don't do funny voices.
Unsubscribed. I'm unsubscribed.
I swear he does. He's got a video of him doing the floss. Go check it out. I'm definitely not lying.
That is the one that I can do. But of course, a Catacon is the big event we put on every year. It's in Dayton, Ohio. It's in November. This year, it's the 8th, 9th, and 10th. It is a terribly named but tremendously fun convention. Hoping for like 600 people this year. So it's still pretty small, self-contained, but you're going to get a chance to play in some amazing games with some amazing game masters, maybe in a D&D inspired murder mystery LARP, maybe in a game you've never heard of, maybe Dread, who knows? But it is a great time. So if you are in Dayton or willing to travel to Dayton in November, please check it out. There'll be links to all the things we talked about, all the different social medias that we did share will be in the show notes to make it easy for you to get there. But overall, we're all big fans of this book, and hopefully you are as well. And then we will just sign off here as we always do at the RPG Academy by saying, remember, if you're having fun,
you're doing it right.
Thanks.
We'll see you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.